Graphic warning. Most people believe that guardian angels are a myth, but I'm convinced that I have one, and that it takes its job far too seriously. At first, it was something that I relied on, an unseen protector that kept me safe. Perhaps I should back up the story and tell you just a bit about the first two times I found my life irreparably altered by my guardian angel. It was my fifth birthday, and my father had come home well after the end of my party, to which no one came. He was drunk and angry. He had always been a mean, overwhelmingly bitter drunk. But this was the first time he had ever looked at me, at his own daughter, with such pure murderous hatred. I don't know what I did to set him off, and I'll admit that most of the attack is a blur now. But it felt as if he had pinned me to the wall, choking my tiny neck, and screaming with alcohol breath into my face. Just as my vision began to go black, and I felt the strength leave my limbs, something moved from above us. I don't remember seeing anything, but I could somehow feel it the moment it entered the room. It descended onto my father's head from above, knocking him to the floor and away from me. I struck the floor fairly hard, and I think I might have blacked out for a minute, because the next thing I remember is opening my eyes and gasping. Lying on the floor beside me, cold as ice and rigid, was my dead father. His forehead caved inward by some intensely strong blow. I actually spent a few weeks in a psychiatric hospital after that day, while the police investigated my father's sudden violent death. Fortunately, it became clear that I was too small and injured to make such a blow, and was eventually released to my mother. Fast forward 5 years, and I was a fairly average 10-year-old. I still visited a therapist, Mr. Darkley, once a week for 2 hours because of that day years ago. It was a month after my birthday that I met my guardian angel a second time, this time when it saved me from a burglar. I came home from school to find the front door ajar by an inch. I shrugged it off as my ditzy mother forgetting to shut it. Following the death of my abusive father, she had become the most caring, amazing mother I had ever known, and we were very close. However, it was clear that something much worse was happening whenever I stepped through the door. On the floor, glass and broken dishes were everywhere from someone going through the cabinets. Silverware, dish rags, and even food from our fridge lie strewn about, as if the intruder didn't know what he was looking for. I don't know why I didn't just turn and run. Perhaps it was because I thought the intruder had already left, and instead moved deeper into the house. The front door opened into the kitchen and living room. The only separation was a transition from carpet to tile. Directly across was the small hallway with 3 doors, my mother's bedroom to the left, and mine was on the right, and the bathroom being straight ahead. I carefully made my way across the kitchen floor, attempting to avoid the sharp shards of broken dishes. Just a few inches from our hallway, my foot landed on half of a glass cup, crushing it underneath with a low crunch. A rough grunt answered the sound, sending dread crawling into my stomach. The intruder was still there. As if waiting for that moment, a huge shape came barreling out of my mother's bedroom and slammed into me. I felt a dozen pieces of sharp glass and ceramic dishes slice into my back. It was a man, and he smelled like body odor, alcohol, and oddly, garlic. I screamed, trying desperately to push him off with my limited strength, but he sat up and brushed my arms away as if he felt nothing. He was ugly. His face old and weathered from years of sun exposure, and a dirty gray beard took up the majority of his face. His breath hit me like an invisible wall as he laughed and tugged at my uniform blazer, tugging it open with 2 grubby fingers, while the other hand held my wrists captive above my head. My guardian came just as my training bra came into view, again coming as an invisible force that I could feel the moment it entered the room. This time I wasn't nearly dead from strangulation, and I watched in equal parts of fascination and horror as this invisible being lifted the old homeless man off of me and to the ceiling. He struggled there, gargling out obscenities and clawing at his neck as if he was being held by the throat. a snap punctured the air, and his body simultaneously went limp while his head whipped around 180 degrees. His body drifted a few inches to the side, and then dropped to the floor with a sickening thump. His face landed just inches from my own. His eyes were still open, frozen in shock and terror. I could only gasp and lay there, partially exposed and shaking. My guardian hovered above me, still invisible, but I knew without looking that it was roughly the size of an adult man, and somehow, I knew that it was sad that I had been hurt before it arrived. I felt something else coming from the creature, a sense of furious dedication. I think that was the moment it promised itself and me that I would never come so close to danger again. I'm sorry, but my mother is calling me. I promise I'll post again tomorrow with more of my story. Gotta run for now. I've got a little while now to tell more of my story. I've decided to give my guardian a name for the first time. I think I never have before because naming it made it more, I don't know, human? It doesn't seem right, but it's hard to tell your story with just pronouns. Therefore, I shall forever call my guardian Wrath, because of everything that's happened. I know it may seem a bit cheesy, but I hope the rest of my story will help you understand just how fitting it truly is. I got called away right after Wrath murdered the burglar, so I'll start with the immediate aftermath. I laid on the floor, bleeding and horrified. I was there for a long time before I could summon the bravery to move. The man's bulging eyes, watching from a head that looked over on the wrong side of his shoulders, as if judging me for the sudden violence of his death. I knew that he would have likely murdered me after he was finished, but I couldn't help but feel guilty even then that he was dead because he had met me. Wrath remained near the ceiling while I struggled up, but then came down to put invisible support behind my shoulders when my knees nearly buckled under my weight. His touch felt cold and wrong through my torn shirt, as if I was being touched by something only just tangible enough to perceive. Blood dripped onto the floor between my feet as I wobbled across the floor to the landline on the wall. Even though cell phones were already very popular at the time, my mother just couldn't part ways with her landline. And so we still had an old corded phone attached to the wall by the refrigerator. I shuffled over, Wrath keeping close behind all the way in case I fell. I picked up the phone. As soon as my finger dialed the second one of 911, Wrath vanished, gone from one instant to the next, as if he was never there. From there, all hell broke loose. The police arrived within minutes, my mother close behind, and I endured round after round of questioning. Why didn't I run? How did his neck get snapped? Was I sure that no one else had come into the house? What really happened? You can tell us. My mom stayed by my side throughout all of it, calmly holding my hand. Dr. Darkly thought I made him up as a coping mechanism. The police thought I was covering up for my father's real murderer. This time I didn't bother telling the truth, and just feigned ignorance, trying as hard as I could to look like the shocked victim. I already had to visit Dr. Darkly, and I didn't want them to put me back in the hospital. It took 2 months, but they finally stopped trying to force new answers out of me. I knew that they knew that I was hiding something, but the lies were so much more believable than the truth. At this point, I didn't even mind lying, because I was so grateful to have someone there to save me. It wasn't until 3 months into the 8th grade, when I met my first bully, that I realized just how quickly such a gift could become a terrible curse. Due to missing the enrollment period while in the psychiatric hospital, I had to go to pre-K while the other 5-year-olds were in kindergarten. This was never a problem, but in 8th grade, a boy named Skylar discovered that I was a year older than everyone else, and decided that meant I was too stupid to be with the other 9th graders. He hounded me incessantly, calling me Molly the Retardy every day. All of this was tolerable, mostly because he was unoriginal with his techniques, until he shoved me down one day during break, sending me to the floor and busting open my lip on a rock. In a burst of ear-popping pressure, Wrath was there. He gathered up Skylar like a sack of potatoes. I screamed, desperate for Wrath not to kill the boy. But my cries only went partially heard. Instead of killing Skylar, a wicked snap sounded through the air, followed immediately by Skylar's agonizing scream. Wrath had snapped his right femur like a toothpick, leaving the sharp shards of one side protruding gruesomely into his flesh. The sight made me instantly sick to my stomach, and I vomited violently, while others screamed and gathered around us. Wrath let the poor boy go just as soon as he inflicted the punishing wound, and left as quickly as he came, leaving me alone with a horribly wounded bully and a school of children scrambling for some adult for guidance. I ended up in the psychiatric hospital for 3 months after that, all because I couldn't keep my big mouth shut. When Principal Dudley arrived at the scene, phone in hand calling 911, I was a rambling mess, sobbing over a pool of vomit and begging for forgiveness.
I'm sorry, I can't control it. He's so strong. He's too strong.
Mother fought and fought to get me back, but they wouldn't give in until I had gone through a thorough evaluation. They diagnosed me with PTSD, bipolar disorder, and depression all at once, and then loaded me up on medication. For a full year, I had no emotions left, medically lobotomized for the trauma of Wrath's revenge. When they finally let me come off my medication, I was 13 and enrolled in a new high school in a city on the other side of the state. I hated that my mother was forced to flee because of Wrath and my stupidity, but there was no other way to distance ourselves from the rumors and the staring and hatred. I wouldn't meet him again until just 2 years ago, on my 16th birthday. If I knew that Skylar was just a prelude of the disaster to come, I would have begged to stay in the hospital until the day I died. Well, I've gotta go. I'll tell more of my story tomorrow. Promise. Between the ages of 13 and 16, my mother and I moved 3 times, each time to a different state. The deaths in my life and the attack on Skylar kept getting found out, and we would both become social oddities, stared at by the neighbors, and whispered about behind closed doors. With each new school I attended, the whispers and bullying became worse, before the secret would even be discovered. Simply because I had moved so often, the others assumed I had some dark secret. Perhaps that was precisely the problem. If a child is forced to move so many times in just 16 years, they become quiet and shy, and go out of their way to avoid interacting with people. It's no surprise that they are considered to be abnormal, but I couldn't help it though. After that horrible accident with Skylar, I avoided the others as if they had some unseen virus, scared to even touch someone else for fear of what Wrath might do. After a year of unbearable medication and all but imprisonment in my own home, I couldn't bear the thought of it all happening again, of someone getting hurt again, and all of my freedoms being taken away. I guess that's a bit selfish of me. After all, I should care more that 2 people are dead, and another permanently scarred because of Wrath. I do care, but not as much as I care about the punishments that follow Wrath's anger, to be trapped inside my own mind, force-fed pill after pill, and told by everyone around me that I was evil, a murderer, and just too sick to know that it has instilled a much greater fear in me, the fear of my life being stolen away before I could ever get a chance to live it. Wrath left me alone during that time, although I suspect it was only because I worked so hard to avoid anyone touching me. My antisocial behavior worked in my favor the majority of the time. As most people are happy to leave the quiet new girl alone, if she puts on heavy goth makeup and pierces her ears with safety pins. I'll admit I went through an interesting, if not cliche, time of my life during those years. I'm not totally out of it now at 18. But then I look like every other gothic scene kid from the 90s, although that was a bit before my time. I just wanted to be as far removed from the normal kids as much as possible, and outright refused any opportunity to make friends or even speak with others. If the teachers called me during class, I answered the question as well as I could. If a classmate attempted to speak to me, I ignored them until they went away. At nearly every school I attended, the other gothic and scene students wanted to bring me into the group, but they would always drop it when it became clear that I didn't want to be one of them. For some reason, they seemed to take it the worst whenever this happened, often being the first to start rumors or attempt to bring up my hidden and shameful past. Once it came out, Mother and I would move again, running as far away from the truth as we could. Mother was a registered nurse, and that meant we pretty much could find work wherever we went. Although she would sometimes be forced to take a pay cut to ensure that she could get a job next to home. After all, she never knew when the next incident might occur. and she became increasingly protective until she all became but my personal warden at home. We talked about homeschooling, but that would be difficult with how much she had to work for us to get the bills paid. I couldn't risk working, because I couldn't stand the thought of one angry customer ending up dead on the floor and the cycle starting all over again. I knew my mother didn't directly blame me for many of the problems we faced, but it was becoming increasingly evident by the way the love in her eyes had dimmed since the Skylar incident, and she was beginning to become resentful. I think by the time I turned 15, she had begun helping me out of some sense of motherly duty more than any type of adoration, and I couldn't blame her. After all, her life was in shambles because of Wrath. And although she was finally free from my father, she and I shared this prison that was built by Wrath. Perhaps that's why she didn't say anything whenever she walked in on me cutting my leg for the first time. I started cutting at 14, first as a test to see if Wrath would appear to punish me, and then to maintain some sort of control over my life, interactions with people that I couldn't avoid, like accidentally brushing fingers with a teacher as I turned in my homework, or bumping into strangers on the street. Things like that would send my heart and mind racing, and I would need to find a safe place to cut into myself. It started with my arms, but those cuts were quickly discovered at school and led to too much attention, and so I quickly moved on to my legs. By the time I turned 16, my legs were covered in hundreds of interlapping scars, newly formed scabs, and many cuts nearly done healing. By then it was nearly a mindless routine to take the blade to myself, and perhaps it had become an obsession. 2 days before my 16th birthday, I had been at a new school for longer than many of the others. It was nearly the 1 year anniversary of my arrival, and I had successfully stayed off the radar of everyone there. No teachers bothered to call on me anymore. Students would part ways almost without thinking, and I felt that perhaps I could scrape some sort of existence here without any more problems. Stupid, stupid me. One day so close to my birthday, the secret finally came out. The moment I arrived at school and saw more than a dozen pairs of judgmental eyes staring at me, I knew the cat was out of the bag, and I would have to go home later that afternoon and tell Mother the bad news. She would be devastated. Having just been promoted after nearly a year of hard work establishing a good reputation at her job, I took a deep breath and forced myself to continue onward into the school, keeping my head low as I felt their gazes burn into my back. Murderer. The whisper could have come from anyone, but the hushed murmurs that followed nearly sent me running for my life. I hated that part, the whispers. It meant I had been noticed, that someone knew who I was, and it also meant that there was a chance that Wrath would come calling. I hurried to class, desperate to sit in my isolated corner desk, and had the school day go by quickly. I don't know how I did it, but I managed to go through the entire day without having too much trouble. Although the whispers and eyes followed me everywhere, no one tried to talk to me or come up to start trouble. I started to think that perhaps it would all blow over without anyone getting hurt. And so when I got home that evening and greeted Mother, I didn't feel the need to tell her that the secret was out. I justified that it wasn't a big deal, so long as the others maintained their distance and only whispered and watched. Mother and I were once so close, so happy to laugh and spend time together after the death of my father. Even during the months following Skylar's attack, we had remained very much a loving mother and daughter. But the year of medication took its toll on our once great relationship, and now we barely acknowledged each other's presence when in the same room together. I went to bed that night, hoping and praying to whatever God might be up there that the whispers would be gone when I arrived at school the next day. It was a Friday, which meant I only had to survive 7 more hours before I could go home and spend 2 whole days away from interaction. Of course, the whispers were worse the next day, and this time, someone tried to talk to me. His name was Thomas, and as if he had walked out of one of those pandering, ridiculous movies, he was the high school quarterback and a nuisance. He truly seemed to believe that others worshipped the ground he walked on, and some people actually did, because the tiny Texas town we lived in only had football to break up the usual routine of life. He came right up to me during lunch period, where I sat alone for the last year, and stood over me for several long minutes. while I desperately tried to keep my eyes on my mashed potatoes.
"So you gonna say hello or what?"
I remained silent, just as I always did, and kept my head down. Thomas shifted from foot to foot, and then sat down across from me, slamming his tray down so hard his mashed potatoes splattered onto the table.
"Look, I ain't here for charity. We're having a party tomorrow, and we know about your messed up reasons for moving here. We want to get the story from the murderer's mouth. So you'll be coming to that party, and you're going to be telling us a little ghost story, okay? Great. It's at my house, and everyone knows where that is. Come at 9.
After speaking more words to me than I had heard anyone say to me in the last 3 years, he got up and left. Of course, I knew where he lived. He lived in the only house in our tiny town that was brand new, built by his business owner father. I sat there shaking, terrified of the thought of going, much less telling my story, and it was already very clear to me that I would be locking my doors and windows that night. School ended, and when I came home, Mother wasn't in. Yet. I figured that I had no choice then. I would have to tell her the truth. I would have to tell her that everyone knew. That night I packed my very few belongings and waited for her to come home. But at 3 a.m. she still hadn't arrived, and I had fallen asleep. The next morning she was still gone, but there was a note on the fridge saying that she had been in late and left early for work. I contemplated on calling her, but I shook my head and I thought better of it. I would tell her in person whenever she came home, and then we would be long gone before the party tonight. Except, she never did walk through that door, and 9 p.m. eventually came around. Just as promised the day before, I checked and double-checked that all my doors and windows were locked, before turning off all the lights and laying down. At 11 p.m., I thought the coast was clear, and began to let myself drift off. Then a heavy thump woke me up with a start. It came from my window, and when I looked up, Thomas's sneering face was peering down at me. He looked like a demon who had come to steal me away. With a menacing grin spread across his face, he lifted his fist and gave the window another hard strike, making me jump.
"You didn't show. We want to know your story, murderer."
A chorus of male voices agreed from out of sight, and my stomach dropped. Had he brought the entire football team? I shook my head and leapt out of the bed, desperate to get to our tiny bathroom, where I knew there were no windows for him to peek inside. Just as I shut the bathroom door and turned the lock, the sound of smashing glass and howling laughter broke the air. They were obviously very drunk, and they weren't taking no for an answer. I fell back from the bathroom door and retreated to the bathtub, furious that I had left my emergency phone on the bedside table charging. After the broken glass came the sound of many heavy feet hitting the floor and much cursing and laughing. The boys were climbing through the window one at a time, Thomas in the lead. I held my breath in the dark. I should have ran out the front door before they got inside. I should have grabbed a kitchen knife. I should have done anything but lock myself inside a room without an escape. Of course, they found me in minutes, and Thomas called my name through the bathroom door.
"Molly, we just want to hear the story. Molly, come on out, emo girl."
A shoulder struck the door, shaking it on its hinges, and I screamed. My terror was met with more howling laughter, as another strike sent a long crack down the middle of the wooden surface. After another hard thump, and the door split in two down the middle, with Thomas all but falling on his face through it, I cowered in the corner, sobbing and begging them to go away, but Thomas found his feet and towered over me. He reached out a long, heavy hand and caught a fistful of my hair, and then dragged me out by it into the dark living room. Someone turned on the light, and my stomach dropped as I saw the other four boys waiting there for me.
"Tell us the story, Molly. We all want to know what it's like to murder your father."
Thomas kept his grip on my hair as he demanded I speak, using it to lift me up and present me to the others. I held my tongue, desperate to give them no sounds but my pained gasping, and I tried to pry his hands off. He shook my head, hard, until I let go and stopped fighting.
I felt as if he might scalp me if he didn't let go soon. "Molly," he drawled in his Texan accent, "just tell us what we want to know and we'll be out of your hair. Get it? Hair?" The others joined in. Two of them were so visibly drunk they could barely stand. Hot tears fell from my face, but I refused to speak another word and simply went limp. Thomas growled and dropped me, but he followed right behind as I hit the floor and covered my small body with his huge frame. "Tell me your secrets, or I'll have to punish you with all my friends here to help. You don't have any of those, do you? Do you want me to be friendly to you?" At this, he ran a hand up my thigh as I struggled in vain to get away. Flashbacks of the burglar sending me into a blind panic. "I can be very friendly, Molly." Wrath then came, a pressure on my ears that I would feel guilty about being happy to feel later. He wasted no time, lifting Thomas off of me and throwing him across the room with such force, he didn't move again from where he landed in a heap. The others scrambled, cursing and screaming, but Wrath wasn't forgiving any of them. The nearest boy, a running back on the team, screamed as his stomach turned inside out on its own. His bowels ripped from his gut. He gurgled and then fell, dead in moments. While the others shared his fate, one boy made it out, but his head snapped around the wrong way as soon as he made contact with the front doorknob. This time, when Mother came home, she didn't bother fighting for me as the police came and took me away. I didn't blame her either. As they sat me down and took my statement, my eyes made contact with hers, and I saw nothing looking back. No hatred, no love, just nothing. I think that was what finally broke me, and I told the police everything. I was with Dr. Darkly at the psychiatric hospital by the following morning, newly 16, and now classified as a dangerous threat to the world around me. I couldn't have agreed more. I'm about to turn 19 now, just 3 months left. Since the deaths of Thomas and his group, I've been a willing prisoner. My mother comes for daily visits, and there's even a small spark of affection back in her eyes now, since I'm so far removed from any threats. It was a long, hard road for her, getting here with me, and I desperately wish she could have avoided all of this, even though I couldn't. Wrath is gone, or perhaps he's just gone for now. I don't know if I'll ever be sure, with his long absences in the past, but I finally managed to talk to him. She is so much more than I ever thought she was, and while her name is still very much fitting, I no longer hate her for what she did to me. The last time I met her was a few months after the attack in my home. It started just like any other situation, with me in danger and blood dripping down my skin. I can remember that day more clearly than the others, perhaps because this time I wasn't distracted by fear or pain. Inside the facility, life was slow, boring, and very, very lonely. I was used to loneliness, craved it, and never really minded that I sat every day in a cafeteria full of crazy people who probably didn't even know that I existed. I preferred it that way, and I allowed the medication to numb me, steal away my emotions and motivation, just as it had for those many years. There would be no getting off this time, and chance of release was minimal, if it even existed, and I couldn't push through the medication enough to care. Dr. Darkly was a middle-aged man, fresh out of school and new to his job the first time we met, but now he's closer and more familiar to me than anyone else. He called me into his office for our session, just as he had every day since my readmission to the hospital, except his eyes were no longer welcoming or kind whenever he looked at me. The final incident, which could not be explained or brushed aside, had finally convinced him that I was the murderer everyone else would have me be, and now treated me as if I had some incurable disease. I greeted him woodenly, uncaring and tired, and sat down in the chair he offered me with a grunt. He sat across from me, flipped open his notebook, and set his pen to the pad, waiting. I sighed, tore my laden lips open, and forced the words out of my mouth. "He's not here anymore. He probably won't be again until I get myself in trouble," I said, my own voice foreign without any inflection. "You say that every day, Molly, but do you ever feel him near you? Why do you think this being would come out just to hurt people and then go away again?" God, I hated that we repeated the same conversation every day. I had no new information to tell, and I was so very tired. I shrugged and hung my head, letting my black hair fall over my eyes so I didn't have to look at him anymore. Dr. Darkly was just like everyone else now, just like my mother. "Molly," he started to speak, but I cut him off, suddenly feeling a tiny spark of anger despite my medication. "Shut up. Just shut up. I don't have any more. I don't have anything left." Dr. Darkly shifted in his seat and cleared his throat, but he didn't speak. Instead, he regarded me thoughtfully. I gave him a single glance through my bangs and then turned my gaze down again, wanting so much for the next hour to tick away already. "Have you ever tried summoning him?" The question wasn't new. He had already asked me many times, and so had my mother. But today I finally took it seriously. "I've tried. I have hurt myself to make it happen. I tried screaming until my lungs burned and my throat was sore, but nothing happened. Wrath only comes if I get hurt by someone else. And I can't risk the life of another person just to see if Wrath would respond. Even if he came, he would just end up killing you, and then I would be sent somewhere worse." My voice trembled with the fear of what worse hell I might find myself in. Dr. Darkly sighed and scribbled something onto his obnoxious notepad. He must have had pages and pages written about me, enough to write the study on the power of a delusional young girl. "I know you believe that, Molly. I know you believe that this is some sort of otherworldly being, and that it hurt those people. But he's not as powerful as you think." I lifted my heavy head and stared at him in bewilderment. Had he ever listened to a word I said to him about Wrath, about the power that murderous creature held? It felt as if he was mocking me, throwing all our years of hard work together into a blender and hitting the button. "You'll die. It's as simple as that," I promised him, forcing my words to come out strong and clear. "I want to try an experiment, Molly," he said, as if I had never spoken. He then stood up. "Stay away," I warned, watching with narrow eyes as he carefully sat down his notepad and faced me with a determined look in his eyes. "It's important to know that you're safe, Molly. I'm not actually going to hurt you." But those words very much seemed to be a threat when he slipped a hand into the pocket of his slacks and pulled out a small pocket knife. I gasped and jumped from my seat, ready to sprint to the door. But the medication made me slow, and he caught me before I had taken the first step. I struggled, desperate to get away, and feeling that familiar tension at the back of my throat. But he only held me tighter, dragging me back down until I was sitting in the chair again. Dr. Darkly leaned over me, his face a blank mask, and his eyes were glass orbs. He pressed the knife against my throat. I tried to stay very still once I felt the cold metal on my skin, but he pressed it there so firmly that even my breathing was enough to cause a very slight breaking of the skin. I whimpered. "It's okay, Molly. I'm not going to do anything to you. I just want to see him. I want to see you summon him," Dr. Darkly explained in his soft, gentle voice. I bit my lip, scared to speak, or even breathe too hard for fear of the blade. A tiny trickle of warm blood crawled down my throat, pooling in the crevice above my collarbone. Dr. Darkly crooked his head to one side, regarding me with eyes that seemed to hold an unnamed fascination with what they saw. Then Wrath came. The pop of his presence harsh on my eardrums, but he did not attack Dr. Darkly immediately as he had the others. Instead, he stayed high in the air, near the ceiling, and regarded us from out of reach. I turned my eyes out of instinct, but I could see nothing. Only felt his presence and emotions. They were a mixture of fury and something else. Something I could not name. "Is he here? Tell him to speak to us. Why doesn't he stop me?" Dr. Darkly inquired, and I didn't have an answer for him. "Please," I whispered. "Let me go. He's here. I don't want you to die."
The blade cut more deeply into my skin as a sob broke past my control and caused me to shake. Dr. Darkly lowered the knife, but did not move away. He simply backed away slightly, looking around the room for Wrath with a guarded expression. "I don't see anything, Molly. How do you know he's here? Tell me what you see."
"He's by the ceiling watching us. He's never waited so long to attack before."
"Hmm. I thought he always attacked right away. Could it be he isn't real, Molly? Could you be controlling all of this instead?" I finally understood what Dr. Darkly had been attempting to prove. He wanted me to see that Wrath was an illusion, something my brain thought up all those years ago, so I didn't have to face the fact that I murdered my father. I shook my head, ignoring the new burning in my neck, where I now had an inch-long cut that was bleeding. "He's here and he's real," I said out firmly. My eyes strained where I could feel Wrath's body floating silently near the ceiling. "Come here," I told him, my voice loud and firm. This was the very first time I would ever get a chance to speak to him in person, and would hopefully be the last. To my shock and amazement, Wrath obeyed, floating down until he was just inches above my head. He stopped, hesitated, but then continued down until I felt his cold touch on my shoulders. The moment his icy presence came in contact with my skin, my world disappeared, and I found myself somewhere new and bizarre. It was as if I was standing right where I had just been an instant ago, but now everything was the wrong color, size, and shape. Everything was there, including Dr. Darkly, but the world had been warped and altered as if I had been taken to another plane of existence. And perhaps I had. And this one, I could see Wrath, and she was nothing like I imagined. She was no taller than I was, with dirty blonde hair that went down to her ankles. Her slender frame was completely naked. Her skin was so pale that you could see the veins pulsing underneath. She looked to be somewhere between her early and mid-20s, and her face was beautiful. Except the beauty stopped below her neck, and she was replaced by scars. Hundreds, no, thousands of them, marked every inch of her body. Her breasts were covered in bite marks, her stomach in long cuts, and pits that looked like healed cigarette burns. There were so many scars. My stomach churned at the thought of the pain that she must have endured while receiving them. I couldn't gather the words to form the hundreds of questions buzzing through my flabbergasted mind.
"I'm your sister," she said softly, a coy smile on her lips.
"I never had a sister, and you're older than me," I cried, so confused I felt a headache forming behind my eyebrows. "Our father had a double life, and I was his first daughter. My mom never knew about his second family, or the little girl he brought into the world. Of course, you were protected from his special interests, so long I was there to keep his attention."
"I don't understand. He was cheating on mother?"
"No. Your mom was the other woman. A woman our father used for a second income to pretend that he had a new job that kept him away for days at a time." As she spoke, I tried to count the scars all over her naked body, my stomach twisting when I saw the number that continued down her thighs and inward out of sight. There were bite marks in her inner thighs, and I shivered.
"Don't worry. I was glad to take it all. He started with me so long ago, I don't remember a time without his attention. He told me about you the moment your mom was told your gender, and he loved to tell me all the things he would do with you once I became no good to him anymore."
My heart sank at the implications. The memory of that very first physical attack suddenly taking a much more sinister tone.
"If he was about to move on to me, what happened to you?" I asked, already fully aware of the answer.
But as if something else was compelling my speech, I had to ask. "He killed me. I knew it was coming. After all, he hadn't given me any attention for a few weeks, longer than I could ever remember," she explained.
"Then that first time you saved me?"
"I had been dead for a month. I had been watching him, waiting to see if he would follow through with his promises and whispers. He had gotten away with murder, completely destroying my body in a fire hidden deep in the woods behind our house. But I wasn't going to let him have you too. You saved me, and all those other times too, I whispered, tears catching in my throat. Yes, I saved you, but I never realized the costs. I was a creature of blind fury for so long, and each time I forced myself to become a monster and punish those who hurt you like he hurt me, I would nearly lose myself and need to rest for years. It took so much just to come out a few seconds at a time, and I felt as if my soul would break into pieces. What's your name? Why haven't you ever talked to me until now? What's changed? The questions poured out of me faster than I could keep up, but she continued to smile. Isabella, but my friends called me Belle, and I never could, before this time. I haven't spent all my energy punishing someone. I've been watching for months now, since I removed those disgusting little boys from this world. And I realized that I was stealing your life away. You've been living in terror of me for far too long. I wanted to talk to you so much, and now you're suddenly here and saying so many things I can't keep up with. My head hurts, I said, trying to breathe through the crazed thoughts going through my head, and so much only confused me more. I can't stay much longer. I'm almost out of time, Belle whispered, and I noticed for the first time her beautiful hair had begun to fade along with the rest of her body. Wait! No! There's so many more questions! Will you come back? What's happening? I cried after her, but she started to fade more rapidly, her voice growing fainter and fainter as she tried to reply. We'll meet again. Protect yourself. Dr. Darkly is good. Listen to him. I love you. Then she was gone, and with her exit, the otherworldly plane on which we spoke disappeared. As suddenly as my half-sister appeared, she was gone, and this time it felt like the start of forever. Dr. Darkly was still there, staring at me with wide eyes from several feet away. He looked as if he had seen a ghost. But I was fairly certain that I was the only one that could see Belle. Still, I approached him with caution, ready to run if he raised his knife again. But it was gone, forgotten on his desk. You floated into the air and just hung there. You were floating in the air, Dr. Darkly said, his tone equal parts horrified and fascinated. It was him. He came to say that he was sorry, and he wouldn't get me into trouble anymore, I said, deliberately dumbing down my words, so he wouldn't think to ask more questions. Of course, that didn't work, and we spent another hour, well beyond our scheduled time, talking about Belle and what she could do. He believed me, and the trust was now back in his eyes. My time in the facility is much easier now, thanks to that last moment of protection from Belle. It feels so strange to say Belle instead of Wrath, but both names still fit. Beautiful Wrath, that's what she was. And she never once apologized for the lives that she took. After so many years of violence and betrayal from a man who should have protected her and kept her safe, probably took her empathy away long ago. I do believe that she loves me, in her own way, and that she acted out of love for me. Unfortunately, I will remain in this facility for the rest of my life, branded unfit for life in the world of normal humans. I don't mind it though. It's much less lonely here with Dr. Darkly and my mother by my side. And I sort of hope I see Belle again. Perhaps this time, we can finally have a real moment together as sisters. I've never had one of those before.
There's always a reason to be afraid.